Yes. Well, to begin with the church and the vicar and wardens. And as far back as I can remember, which is going to be on time, the vicar was a man named Davidson, and he took over the new church one time. He wasn't very long there, and he became ill. He had to get a clerk in charge to do his work, and his daughter took him to Castle Town to take care of him. But he was collecting the stipend and paying the clerk in charge. The clerk in charge was a man named Jarvis Nick, and he was there for 7 or 8 years. And he was followed by another clerk in charge named Tim Reed. But Tim Reed wasn't clerk in charge very long. Davidson died, Tim Reed was appointed vicar. But the church itself was built in 1881, and on the belfry, as you can see when you're going on the gate, it's the initials TH, cut in a rather big type on the red sandstone, TH 1881. And the TH was a builder in Tunisia at that time, Thomas Harrison. I haven't recognized it, but Thomas Harrison. So that's the origin of the present church. But I know the church goes back to 1714, built by Bishop Wilson, on land presented to the parish by a family named Ratliff, who owned Nagiero and Gordon at that time, different branches of the family.
Mm.
And Ratliff from Gordon, he was one of William Lone's helpers in the fight for the Manx against the Derby family. But he wasn't quite high enough up to have been shot with William Lone. And the other family, they died out quite a while ago, the Ratliffs. And one of their family named Quirk, who appeared to have been connected with them by marriage, he was the last one of the family to own Nagiero, the two Nagieros. Then it was sold and Curran bought it. And that was the ancestor of the Currans, who have been leaving money here to different charities since then.
Where did they come from?
From, I think it's Arbury.
Mm-hmm. Was this land that the church was built on, St. Peter's you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about Kirkpatrick Church.
You're talking about Kirkpatrick?
No, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know a great deal about Peter. Kirkpatrick is the important place to
me. It made me ask, because I couldn't understand how that land would extend.
Aye, oh yes, Kirkpatrick. Mm-hmm. And, what was it? There was a keel somewhere in the neighbourhood at the time when there were several of them all over the country.
Yeah.
Because on the Ordnance Survey map there's an entry, a name, Keel Crow. And there's a bit a field there that nobody ever claimed by the bridge on the St. John's Road from Patrick Church. And that was called Keel Crow. I believe at one time. And there was a sexton came to Patrick. Nobody touched this old glebe, you know. It's only a field half an acre or so or less. And old sexton, his name was John Knight. He took possession of it. Of course, he had a certain amount of authority to take care of it, him being the sexton and in charge of the glebe. And he cleared stones out of it, planted it, and he took a mortgage on it, £5. So at some time or other, he wanted money, you see, and he took a £5 mortgage on this. And the mortgage got in arrears, he borrowed the money from the Glenmay Rechabites, and they had to take the land over when Knight was unable to redeem the mortgage or pay the interest.
Mm.
So it still belongs, the site of this keel still belongs to the Glenmay Rechabites after, oh well, 100 years. So that's how...
Amazing story.
Eh?
That's an amazing story.
Isn't it?
Mm.
Of course, there's the John Knight. John Knight was dead before I was born. He's dead a long time ago,
mm.
And I don't think he's any... No, he hasn't any descendants in the Isle of Man, but he has in South Africa. He'll have grandchildren
mm.
there.
There were knights in Andrews, weren't there?
Probably it was one of them.
Mm.
I don't know his origin. I don't know about his origin, but I know that the family has died out anyway, his descendants. There's none of them left. Now, there's if you're still interested in keels, there's another keel that's not recorded in a field on Gordon. And Vicar Holmes, when he was making a list of the keels in his parish, that's a long time ago when Vicar Holmes was there, he drew attention to this one in the field at Gordon. He said that the position of it was opposite Gordon House, near the stream. Well, opposite Gordon House and near the stream, there's a field there of about 8 or 9 acres, and every year there's oats in it. If you go up to the rocks on the other side of the road, the land rises rather rapidly there, and if you go up to the top of the high ground and look down on this field of Gordon, you can see a place where the oats is a different colour from the rest of the field when it's about half ripe, a sirtle. You'll see pictures of sirtles of places over in the south of the island in their, what's his name, that shop? Stenning's book.
Yeah.
Pictures there, Stenning's.
Yeah.
I've seen it there. So that is undoubtedly the outline of the
mm.
keel
mm.
that Vicar Holmes was referring to. Of course, there's places over in Derby and up at the Airy where burial grounds have been found, but I never saw any traces of a keel connected with them.
Mm.
I know two places at the Airy in particular, one at Carnegie and the other at the Airy where when they plugged a little deeper than usual, they turned up the stone slabs. Quite a number of them too, in both those places. In one of the places, there's just men were building a new edge and they came across the graves. Anyhow, that's enough for Patrick and the church, I suppose. But the New Year's Day used to be quite a holiday for the people of Patrick and Foxhall. They had their own camog clubs, not football or cricket, but camog. And there was a field up at the Airy, it's called Quirk's Brain. I know the field well, it's dead level, about 2 acres, and as flat as that table. And that's where the teams met every New Year's Day. A team from Glenmay and a team from Foxhall met there, and they spent the whole afternoon playing camog.
How long ago?
Well, my father was born in 1844, and he remembered it when he was a young man, say 1860, oh well, slightly over the century ago.
Mm. Can you tell me what the rules were, or how it was played? Yeah.
Very much like football, for rules, but it was played with these crooked sticks instead
mm.
of by hand or by kicking.
Yeah.
But they had an object that they knocked about with a crooked stick, and it had to go through a goal on each side. We used to play it at school when I was going to school.
Mm. Were there any markings on the ground?
Oh yes, yes.
How was it done?
Well, I wouldn't say that they were painted markings.
Oh no.
No.
Oh,
but
no.
There was a stone at each corner of the den, you see.
Mm-hmm. To mark the goal?
To mark the goals, that'd be about all. And then this field where it was played, this particular competition where it was played, it wasn't too wide. There was no need for sidelines. The hedges would be a
yeah.
very natural boundary.
How were the players arranged?
teams.
Mm.
They would be arranged in teams, of course, but the formation of them on the field before starting off, I don't know. I was never told.
Mm.
Now, the vicar and wardens were the responsible authorities for almost everything in the parish, even up to the time that I went to school. And until about 1890 or 1895, they were responsible for poor relief. And people who were in difficulties, they would go to the vicarage and make a complaint, and the vicar would consult the wardens. And then they had to find money for, to form a fund to get the relief money, you see.
Yeah.
And that was done by subscriptions, getting up concerts, and some people, when they were dying, they were leaving money to form an endowment fund. And those endowments are still in existence, of course. They're used by endowment committees all over the island.
Mm.
You may know about them in the different places. I've been on one here for over 30 years in Peel.
Mm.
That was the funds. But that wasn't quite enough. Latterly, anyhow, before the government took over the relief of the poor, so the vicar and wardens collected subscriptions from the farmers and the landowners, because there's very few other people had any money to spare.
Mm.
I know when my father was a church warden, I'd been out collecting subscriptions in the evening after school. And I've also been taking the money to, when I go to school in the afternoon, he'd tell me now, go to the vicarage and get some money. The vicar would be the treasurer for the vicar. Go to the vicarage and get some money. Take so much to Nanak area, so much to Ned Moore, I think the other man's name was, so much to somebody else. And I would do that when we came out to school, you see, before going home to tea.
Mm.
I don't think there's anybody else in Ireland who's ever done that.
Well,
it's not very likely anyhow, because I was only a kid at the time, and I wasn't quite, no, I wasn't left school when the boards of guidance came in, poor life authorities came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was an unpleasant position for the poorer people then, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, they had to apply for relief, you see. And it depended on the nature of the particular warden or particular vicar they went to.
Mm. And they wouldn't get much.
Well, if they got half a crown a week, it would be as good as 10 bob now, wouldn't it, to help them on with their ordinary income? Or better than that, it would be nearly as good as 15 shillings, wouldn't it now?
Maybe.
Yes. So, that was the poor relief in the parish. And then the school, like all the schools on the island, man, was a church school. Nobody else cared anything about whether the children were to be educated or not. Only the church, you see. And the vicar came into the school 2 mornings in the week to give a religious instruction of about half an hour a time. Anyhow, the government took over, and the nonconformists, of course, they didn't like the vicar going into the schools. They thought it would be an advantage over them, not just for the good of the children. So Tynwald passed an act abolishing the right of the vicars, but that's not so long ago. That was only about 1920 or something, I think. The schools were taken over completely.
Yeah.
But the property still should belong to the vicar and wardens, because they got the money and built the schools, all the schools in the Isle of Man.
Parochial schools,
you see. But the Wesleyans were a little bit envious, and the Roman Catholics, and they had schools of their own. The Wesleyans had one in Peel. They may have had one in Douglas, too. They didn't like the idea of them being left out, so they were prepared to pay for it to the extent of building a school each. There's one over here, the remains of one, anyhow.
Were there any old Wesleyan chapels in Patrick?
Yes, there were two or three of them, three or four.
Any buildings left?
Yes. One in Dobby is turned into a cowhouse.
Is that one the one with the old date on it, 1700 something?
That'll be it, yes.
I wonder about
this. And there's another in Dobby that there's services in it sometimes on Sunday afternoons. And then there was one, that was all that side of the parish. But the Foxhill's in the parish too, you see, so there was, when the crowds of people that came to Foxhill from other parts of the island, from across the water, when the mines became prosperous, of course, they built a couple up there. Then there was another denomination called Primitive Methodists. They had two or three. They were the, and they were supposed to be like the Wesleyans, but they were in opposition for some reason or other. I don't know what it was, but they just didn't like each other anyhow, and they set up an opposition. And once a year, these Primitive Methodists in Glen May had a mound down at the bottom of the village there. And I don't know, would it be an ancient monument or an ancient structure of some kind? And they had a service down there that they called a camp meeting in the open air some fine Sunday afternoon every year. Of course, that dropped out. Well, I was just beginning to go to school, I think, when I heard about the camp meeting. Then in the churchyard, of course, itself, there are stones of a little bit of interest there. There's two lots of these dungeons under the ground, they're vaults.
Mm.
One belonged to the Ratliffs of Magala, and the other belonging to a family named Cosnahan,
mm-hmm.
that drifted to Patrick from Sandon, I think. There was quite a number of that family. They were vicars of Sandon.
Mm.
You're very likely to have read about them. So, they came there, and one of the daughters married a man named Thomas, and the Thomas is the Captain Crown at Andrews.
Okay.
His mother, or his grandmother, was one of the Thomases from Ballycotton.
Mm.
That's at Patrick.
Mm.
So they were both there. And then there's graves there that on the stones that shows a bit of tragedy, that somebody or other, Killer, I think the name is, gives a name and age, and lost at the Herrings.
Mm-hmm.
That's all, the only inscription. So evidently,
how old is that stone?
It's not to do with the destruction of the herring fleet of Douglas, it's a different date, it's
mm-hmm.
a rather earlier date than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one stone with a verse or two of Manx on it, and there was a family built in rather a nice house down at Glenfever Bridge there, called Glenfever House. The name was Cameron, and there was a generation or two of them there.
Mm-hmm.
They've died out. It's when you go down to the bottom of Glenfever Hill, this house is away in from the bridge, among trees, about maybe 100 yards from the high road. It's they own the property both sides of the road and the river there. And old Cameron built a new corn mill, because corn mills were not getting, they weren't plentiful enough at that time, and he built one there, and it was a very busy place for some years.
The Great Glenfever Mill?
Yes, but of course, as a mill, it died out. It's no longer used as a mill now. Hasn't been for about 30 years.
Mm.
Because
nice
with the introduction of steam mills for the thrashing, and people with these hand mills, portable engines,
mm.
they could do all their grinding at home, you see, for beating them. And in any case, the corn was sold for export more than it had been formerly,
mm-hmm.
when that mill was built, because the mills were to prepare the grain for local consumption,
mm-hmm.
crushing for the animals, farm animals, and then purifying it a bit for human consumption, you see,
mm-hmm.
taking to the homes, because the staple diet was largely oatmeal, barley meal,
mm-hmm.
either as porridge or bread.
Yeah. There'd be very little wheat grown around Patrick.
Not much,
mm.
not much. There would be an odd field sometimes, but not much, because
down
near
the sea, perhaps.
I don't think the temperature was very suitable. The land is rather high in the whole of the parish. feet for cultivation.
Mm.
So.
How long is it since this man built the new mill at Glenfable?
Well, here again, now I can give an approximate date. I knew a man who would be born about 1860, and he'd seen it being built when he was a lad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
1870 or something.
It's 100 years ago.
Mm. I wonder what it was like before that.
Well, there were a number of smaller mills all over the parish.
Mm.
There was two in Glenmay in my memory, and I never seen. Yes, I did see one of them working. People are having the corn ground at Kringle's Mill. The highway board pulled it down some years ago to widen the road. There was one in Glenrushen.
What was that called?
I've seen the name, but I can't remember it. But the one at Glenmay was.
Not Mulnasale?
It would be Mulnasale. Yeah,
mm.
That is the name.
Mm.
I don't know exactly where it was. But there's a number of
Kringle's Mill on the right hand side or the left as you go to Glenmay, as you go to Dalby.
From
Glenmay, as you go further along.
Oh, on the high road, you mean?
Mm.
Well, there's a new mill built by a family named Quayle in there from the high road. The miller's house is there still, it's occupied, it's rather a nice house. It's occupied by Mr. and Mrs. Brideson. And that died out pretty soon. It didn't last a very long time.
That was a newly built mill, was it?
That was the newest of the two in Glenmay.
Those are people are called Quayle the Rook?
Yes, Quayle the Rook's grandfather. Father, his father too. Yes. By the way, Quayle the Rook, you've got to be careful about that because Quayle the Rook has got a lot of descendants in the Isle of Man.
Mm.
Mr. Cashenough, who mentioned the Isle of Man Bank, is his great-grandson to start with. His grandson, rather.
Mm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
A man named Quayle, who used to be on the town commissioners here in Peel,
mm.
An aggressive kind of chap. He was Quayle the Rook's nephew.
Mm.
So it doesn't do to mention names.
And that mill was on the left then, same side as the post office?
No, opposite. Mm. Kringle's mill was almost opposite the post office.
Yeah.
Quayle's mill was up by the stream. Up towards.
By Brideson, what is now Brideson's house?
Yes, Brideson's house is the miller's house.
And the mill is no longer there though.
It may be used for garages or something like that. The ruins of it is there anyhow.
Mm.
I know that.
But that wouldn't be an old mill, not as old as Kringle's mill.
Yes, quite as old as Kringle's, one of them, but there's another one that Henry Quayle built for a thrashing mill. That was the last that was in existence there. And that was the one that belonged to the Kringle family. The Quayle family who lived there, Henry Quayle. But the Quayle family, they had the post office and a grocer's shop in the village down at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's the post office you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and it's still used as a post office there. Now, Quayles must have, when Glenrushen mines were working, Quayles must have had a very prosperous grocery business there. Because
mm-hmm.
they had a delivery cart going round out Glenrushen way. Out to Glenrushen and possibly to Foxhall, but I don't know for certain. Out to Glenrushen and in over the area where about 7 or 8 families lived at that time, there's none now. That's the Patrick area, not the Foxhall area.
Mm.
Down back to Glenmay again, because I've been told about an accident that Henry Quayle had. There was 2 or 3 thatched cottages by the side of the Glenrushen road going out, and the road is very much higher on the downside than on the other side. One side is excavated, the other side is packed up. And in one case, the road was right against the wall of a cottage. And the roof of the cottage was going up from the level of the road up to the peak of the roof. And Henry Quayle was coming there one day with a pair of horses and a cart. And he'd been out to Glenrushen delivering groceries. He was the son of the Quayle who owned the shop at the time. And he was a bit careless on the trace horse, that's the front one of the two, they were in tandem. It was a bit troublesome, and he neglected him for a moment, and he shied at something, and swerved to a side, and he got onto the roof of the cottage and went down his 4 feet, all 4 of his feet down through the thatch roof, and there was one of the kiddies in bed, sick, but he wasn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
course, I knew of another accident of exactly the same kind about Ballymore Glen, where one of the cattle went through the roof that was sloping up from the level of the ground.
Mm. They were so low, the heights in
the winter, isn't it? Yes, they'd only be about one story really in height, and if under the slope then there'll be a cocklocked, which they got up on a, up to on a ladder. I've been in a house and seen the people going up and down to the cocklocked. That it was a little cottage on Patrick Pickeridge, on Patrick Glebe.
Oh, they were all like that, I suppose.
Yes. And of course, the important family in the parish at that time was the captain of the parish, who was a gentleman, of course. His name was Kirkpatrick, and he was the only captain ever I knew there. And sometime afterwards, his grandson became captain. He's not so very long dead. You may have heard
Quirk
of him.
Raby?
Quirk Raby.
Mm-hmm.
So his grandfather was the first captain I ever heard of there. But there had been others of the same family.
Mm-hmm.
And then over Derby again, there was one or two families there that thought they were rather important. There was the Quains, Father Quain, the Gilles Bellby, what was the name? They were in Balach, and there was the Kays Balavana. They owned farms of about 100 acres or so. Of course, they were of some consequence in the parish.
Mm. And would have been there a long time.
Four generations of them had been there, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a family named Carrick and Glenmission, and the Clarks, the Clarys. And one of the Clarys, he must have had a big family, because there was three or four small crops made of their original holding. And there was a family named Kotcher and Glenmission too, the Ballock Kotchers.
Mm-hmm.
There might be more up at the area on the tops. And they'd been there for generations. And then there was an important family there that had part of Raby Beg, the top of part. And Thomas Gillen died when his family were very young. And his wife was a plucky woman, she'd reared them all without any help from anybody. She had about 30 acres of land that belonged to the family. Of course, they were never starved. Not like people who had nothing but the cottage there, and you know, maybe them only living in it by permission. But she was a plucky old lady. She had this family, and they were like her. When the sons got old enough, when they've gotten to about 16 or so, immigrating. Thomas, the oldest son, he was skipper of a trawler. After a small coasting vessel, he'd been to the Mediterranean several times, and when he came home in 1850 from one of his trips, in 51, he'd heard of gold being discovered in Australia, and that there was a demand for passages. It was 1851, that was, or 52 perhaps. Demand for passengers on every boat sailing to Australia, so he thought that he would take his schooner and fill her up with emigrants. And he got the Graveses, the shipbuilders of Beale here, to build one for him. And in 1853 he had 37 emigrants on it. And he set out for Australia. And he beat the boat carrying the post on the way. Pastor Thomas Gilman, captain of the Vixen. That was the name of the boat. And John, another son, he went to America, and he